Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Victoria Cash. Thanks for calling the Lucky Land Hotline. If you feel like you do the same thing every day, press 1. If you're ready to have some serious fun for the chance to redeem some serious prizes, press 2. We heard you loud and clear. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com right now and play over 100 social casino-style games for free. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It's time for today's Lucky Land Horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say. Your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the Monsters of Socks podcast, where, depending on where you look, you may see we have a logo now. Dan, we have a logo.
We got a logo. Isn't that cool?
It's very colorful.
It's a pretty cool one, I think. It's better than I could have done.
It's one that...
It was your idea. Take a bow.
Yeah. It was my idea to have Monster scaling the Green Monster. And after some back and forth, we have a new logo. And it is a new day for the Monsters of Socks podcast network. And it's a new week. The Red Sox they finished up their win streak at what, 8? They won 8 in a row? Is that right?
8 in a row. 8 in a row. Lost, split with the Braves. Lost game 1 behind an ugly Nick Pivetta start. Won last night behind a beautiful Brian Bello start. Actually, about last night's game, Brian. I don't know if you connected the dots here like I did. Last night, Brian Bello pitched outstanding. 6 innings, I believe 5 strikeouts, 1 earned. Tristan Casas hit a giant game-breaking bomb in the later innings. Jarren Duran had another outstanding game, a couple of hits, stolen base. So you know what that makes last night, don't you, Brian?
Oh, no, I don't. What is it?
That's a Dave Dombrowski masterclass.
Woo!
Brian Bello, Tristan Casas, and Jarren Duran leading the way. I will say it will be interesting. So Jarren Duran is I should have double checked this for the show. He is, believe it or not, like creeping up on Alex Verdugo in the team's WAR leaderboard, despite the fact that he started the year down in Worcester. And Verdugo is keeping pace. It's not like he's slumping at all. But if Verdugo does slump at all, Jarren Duran may pass him for team WAR. And, of course, it wouldn't – I don't think it would surprise anybody if Brian Bello ends up being the best pitcher on this team. That would be interesting. That would be an interesting little development. Jarren Duran is not going to. He is not going to lead the Red Sox in WAR. We all know that. But if he ends up actually taking a stranglehold of this center field job, as he appears to be doing, we could be in a position where, Brian Bello, a Dombrowski guy, is the key guy in the rotation, and Jarren Duran, one of the key guys in the lineup.
Oh, like I thought I said, he wasn't a scouting guy, though.
Yeah.
Thought all he did was trade for star players.
You know, I looked something up before we started this, after I realized I was going to start with the bit. And look, am I trolling a little bit here? Yes. But I do think we as Red Sox fans actually need to agree on the record here and agree about the history of the last 10 years of this franchise. As everybody knows, the Red Sox farm system was ranked 30th last in Major League Baseball when Chaim Bloom took over. And the general narrative as a result of that is that, you know, Dabrowski is a guy that strips the farm system. And he did make a ton of trades of high impact prospects. We all know that. Yoan Moncada, Michael Kopech, Mauricio Dubon, Manny Margot, Luis Anderson Espinosa. Most of them were outstanding trades. I would say like pretty much all of them, but the Pomeranz trade were outstanding deals. But now we're looking at this and it's a couple years later and now Duran is turning into a player. Bayo is absolutely a player. Casas, we still have high hopes for. And I looked back at the drafts. The guy who needs to be getting blamed here is Ben Cherington. The person who's at fault for the Red Sox having the 30th best farm system in 2019 is Ben Cherington, 100%. You ready to hear some names?
Yes.
All right. Cherington was in charge of the Red Sox for 4 drafts. 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015. Here are his top 10 picks for each of those 4 drafts. Feel free to stop me if you ever recognize a name. First pick you ever made, Devin Marrero. Then Brian Johnson, Pat Light, Jamie Callahan, Austin Maddox, Ty Buttery, Mike Aguilera, Justin Haley, Kyle Krause, Nathan Minnick, Mike Miller, JT Watkins. Those are the first 10 picks in the 2012 draft. He did get, in the 18th round, a guy you have heard of named Shaq Thompson. So great job identifying athletic talent there, Ben Cherington. Not a great job identifying baseball talent. 2013. Boy, this list is really something. Trey Ball, Teddy Stankiewicz, John Denny, Miles Smith, Corey Luttrell, Jordan Austin, Mike Adams, Forrest Allday, Kyle Martin, and Taylor Grover. I will give him credit. In the 26th round, he did get Mauricio Dubon. 2014.
Did you say Taylor Grover?
Yeah, there we go. Wow, I didn't think we'd have a chance to get your Grover impression out twice in 1 month on the Monsters of Sock podcast. You know what, though? I actually didn't even – that's a really good list of names in general, Grover inside. Grover aside, Forrest Allday. Whew. And Trey Ball. I mean, Trey Ball is a great name.
One of my best tweets ever was very simple. And it was Trey Ball, more like Trey Bad, but the first way.
Oh, that is good. Well done. All right, let's see if you have any puns for the 2014 class. First round, Michael Chavis. Second round, Michael Kopech. Then Sam Travis, Jake Cozart, Kevin McAvoy, Josh Ockamy, Danny Mars, Reed Riley, Ben Moore, and Kevin Steen.
I mean, Kopech is good. So
Kopech's good, yeah. And then 2015, his last draft, first round pick, Andrew Benintendi, Austin Rye, Tate Matheny, Jager Rusconi. Might be Jager Rusconi. I don't know. We're never going to know how he pronounces his name because no one knows who he is. Travis Lakins, Ben Taylor, Logan Allen, Tucker Tubbs, and Mitchell Gonzulos.
Yeah, I mean, we talked last week about if in the hypothetical situation where this team, the 2023 team, was to like it all imitate the 2013 team, why doesn't Ben Cherington get recognition for that team? And I think this is probably part of why.
Yeah.
I mean, that is
Andrew Benintendi and Michael Kopech and nothing else and 4 years of drafts.
Yeah, it's not good. And then when you flip it around on Dombrowski, if Jaren Duran had enough at bats to qualify, which of course would probably level things out, his 176 WRC plus would be fifth in the majors, just ahead of Ronald Acuña Jr. So, so he is in fact pounding the shit out of the ball. Do you want to take a guess at who's number one among qualified batters in WRC plus?
So you said qualified, so it's not Adam Duvall.
No.
It's not Verdugo, or we would know about that.
No, it's not. No. Duran's would easily be the highest on the Red Sox.
Let's see. I know James Outman must be up there. He's had a hell of a start to the year.
You will not get, I would have to give you 25 guesses and a couple hints for you to get it.
All right. Well, give me a couple hints. Because 25 guesses will not be good radio.
Okay. I'd have to look it up, but I think he plays for the worst team in the league. Certainly the worst team in the AL.
Okay.
Not the Yankees.
So the worst team in the league right now is the Oakland A's.
All right, I was right.
Who is on the Oakland A's? Let's see.
The A's actually have two in the top 11. They have one.
What?
Number one and number 11 in WRC plus.
Oh my goodness. Shit.
It's the most outrageously A's thing for these two guys to be up there. I'll even tell you. Number 11 is Ryan Noda. But number one.
Yep, I knew that.
Number one by a considerable margin over Yandy Diaz is Brent Rooker. He has a 199 WRC plus. Easily. He's 14 points ahead of Yandy Diaz.
Brent Rooker,
yes.
10 home runs, 317 batting average, he's slashing 317, 436, 54. Wow.
It's incredible.
That is incredible. Gosh, well, I mean, what a weird, sad, pathetic team. I mean, everyone's calling them a Triple A team, and by results, you can't argue with that, but at least they have something to watch out there in Oakland.
I
have not watched one inning of the A's this year, but
the list,
maybe I should check out Brent Rooker.
Their list, the top four in WRC plus are Brent Rooker, Yandy Diaz, Matt Chapman, and Sean Murphy. Didn't three of those players play for the A's?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah.
Oh my. Oh,
and
my.
Yandy Diaz probably was available to the A's at some
point. He's like, he didn't play, but he definitely is like an A's special. But anyhow, enough about that. Good job, Dombo. Good job. It's paying off. It was nice to see Duran snap the little slump he had gotten into. But I mean,
he's up to, just to also fall back on what I speculated on before, he's up to 1.3 BWAR on the season. Verdugo's at 1.5.
It's wild, man. It is absolutely wild. And, as good as the offense has been, he's stealing bases really frequently. And given how the game has changed, it's as I said, I mean, this is more than I could have expected, and who knows how long this will last. But, he only had to move a little bit toward a game that was moving toward him, and it seems like he's done it, so.
Yeah, and you're right. He's stealing bases. He's playing solid defense in center field. I mean, I guess now that I think about it, I'm sort of shocked that Yoshida is not higher up on the Red Sox WAR leaderboard. But I guess that's purely a testament to Duran's all around effectiveness. Yoshida's actually I know these numbers mean nothing at this point in the season, but it's still interesting. I'm just gonna give you the top names here. This is baseball.
Well, if he had been shitty, we would say those numbers mean something. So we'll give him a little bit of credit, right?
Yeah. This is going to shock you, actually, I think, now that I look at this list. So I told you I told you Verdugo's one and Duran is two. You want to take a guess at who number three is?
Is it Connor Wong?
It's Connor Wong. I suppose he's getting most of that value from the outstanding catcher defense that he's providing. Quick plug for overthemonster.com. If you want to read about Jacob Roy, wrote about Connor Wong's defensive resurgence. I mean, he's thus far making a case at being the best defensive catcher in baseball, which is not what he was known for as a prospect. I mean, he's an athlete. The guy is definitely an athlete for a catcher, and he can and still does play in the infield, but I don't think anyone was seeing him being a defensive stalwart back there. So he is number three.
How did they get Connor Wong? I can't remember.
I have no idea.
Yeah, okay.
I think you know what they when they beat the Cardinals in the 2013 World Series, they got Connor Wong as an award because he is Connor Wong's or Colton Wong's younger brother.
Oh, I thought you were going to say he was his son. I didn't. No. That it does make that makes way more sense. I was like,
that's actually not true, by the way. As you clarify, I did assume for most of my life, that I knew who Connor Wong was. I was just like, well, he must be Colton Wong's brother because they're two dudes who play baseball with the last name Wong, and they both have like country singer first names. So I was like, okay, they must be brothers, but they're not. They are not remotely related.
It'd be like if Connor Joe's brother was Colton Joe.
Colton Joe.
I don't Colton know Joe DiMaggio. Joe
That's good. Is that it? Did you just?
I just did that. Just freestyled out right there. Yeah.
Who is Colton Joe though?
Oh no, Colton Joe is not a real person. Connor Joe is a real person.
Oh, okay. Wait, who is Connor Joe?
He's a first base slash outfielder for the Pirates, who's, I believe, like top 25 in WRC plus this year.
Oh yes, okay, yeah, I do know you're talking.
One of the great names. That's like I just.
Yeah.
Connor Joe. Joe is a last name is just fantastic.
It is. Well, yeah. I mean, he is Korean, so that's probably.
Yeah.
All right. You want to guess who number four is?
Yeah, I'm guessing it's not Yoshida, given our
it's not Yoshida
talk. And is it Devers?
It's Josh Winkowski.
Man, life finds a way. Yeah, oh my
but
god!
But anyway, in your defense, and like I said, it's ridiculous to look at these numbers at this point. Anyway, but Josh Winkowski is four at 1.1. Rafael Devers also has 1.1, and he is listed as at five. So there must be a decimal points there.
Okay.
All right. I won't make you guess the rest of them. Number six, Adam Duvall, hanging in strong there with 0.9. Number seven, Mr. 400 himself, Kenley Jansen. And then eight is finally Yoshida, who's only has 0.6 WAR on the year so far. And then rounding out the top 10, John Schreiber is also at 0.6, and Chris Martin. That really surprised me. Chris Martin is at 0.5 somehow.
That's just barely pitched. Because Fitzy is juicing the vote. That's why.
That's probably. So there you go.
What do you think about Kenley throwing 99? Just being like, was just like, this is number 400. I'm just going to do it.
Yeah, that's something, isn't it? Wouldn't it be funny if it turns out he's been working too slowly all this time? And the one thing everyone was like sort of freaked out about in the offseason, but not really freaked out about it. We just had to fill time with something to talk about. That was Kenley Jansen going to respond to the pitch clock. And it turns out he's responding to the pitch clock by having one of the best years of his career.
I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that for some people it's going to help. And you could equate that with like literally the shot clock in basketball, in the sense that you have less time to think about these things. Maybe it just becomes more routine. I did, however, want to share one thing I thought about this week. This is totally random, but it's from a 2004 game, and we can talk about 2004 at any time because we're allowed for the rest of our lives. I was at a Sunday afternoon game at Fenway, and Curt Schilling was pitching, and I thought, because this play couldn't happen anymore. They're playing the Rangers. I don't remember who was on first base. And Schilling waited, 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 threw over. Guy dives back. Ball back to Schilling. Waited. Threw over. Guy dives back. Threw back to Schilling. Schilling sets and then immediately turns and picks the guy off. Because he timed him out twice. He's like sort of, and I was thinking, that was so rare that I still remember how great it was. Like, oh, that couldn't happen anymore.
No, I couldn't. But do you miss that?
No.
No.
No, yeah, I love the pitch clock.
Yeah. I don't even, I will say, I don't, and maybe this is a good thing. I don't seem to notice the base running elements of the new rules as much as I thought I would. And maybe I should look into this. Maybe pitchers just aren't throwing over as much, period. But I kind of anticipated that one of the effects of the new rules would be like a pitch, you know, a pitcher would throw over with a guy, you know, with a base stealer on first. And then all of a sudden there'd be like a heightened intensity. Ooh, is he going to throw over again? Can he throw over again? You know, if he throws over again and he doesn't get him, it's going to be like a guaranteed stolen base. And at least I haven't experienced the game in that way yet. Maybe I'm not paying attention to it. Maybe the announcers aren't doing a good enough job alerting the viewers when that's happening. But I haven't really noticed much of a change in the base paths.
You know, I think that will change when the games actually start to get important. Not that they're not important, but
yeah,
pennant race, and especially in the playoffs, I think that could be a pretty big deal.
Yeah, late innings, pinch runner comes in.
People are playing for one run now, but not nearly as often as they will later in the season.
Right.
And when that happens, I mean, in the playoffs, I agree with you. In the playoffs, that could be just unbelievably critical. And in a good way, could add some positive drama. And if not, who cares? It'll be faster. So we'll just get positive drama faster.
Yeah. I certainly don't miss pitchers throwing over, you know, three or four times in one at bat. And I certainly don't miss them throwing over just because they want the catcher to throw down different signs and all the annoying stuff that we just put up with for years.
I mean, I do think using Curt Schilling in his example, someone who abused the system, is like a perfect.
That's a good point.
Perfect. Like, and like Max Scherzer, who is Schilling-esque in some ways, but like way, like the good, the competitive stuff and the gaming the system stuff part alone. Like in spring training, I know that he was messing around with the timing, where if someone called a timeout, just staying on the mound. And Sandy Alcantara did this the other day too, where when someone called the timeout, the pitcher, they just stand there. They're just ready. The second they step in, they throw it.
Mm-hmm.
So that is, we'll see more of that, but I'd rather see the gamesmanship to make it go faster. But most importantly, the Red Sox are continuing to win, which is what I like.
They sure are.
And the Yankees are not, I can't say they're not, they're just not as much.
I wish I could take credit for predicting that the Yankees were going to be so thoroughly mediocre this year.
But they're not, but they're four games above 500.
I know.
It's wild. Like there's one team in the rest of the AL that would not be in last place in the AL East.
There's a short, maybe it's still in effect today. It's probably not. A couple of days ago, there was a brief moment in time where if you looked at the American League standings, and you know, with the East placed on top as it traditionally is, the 10 teams in the American League East and the American League Central were actually perfectly ordered by record. Because the last place team in the American League East had a better record than the first place team in the American League Central. So you literally could just look at the two top divisions and it just went right down 1 to 10.
Yeah. This, you know what this dovetails with, talks about you reading the newspaper. Cause that is a straight up looking at the standings like, oh, look at that.
It does. I can't take credit for I can't take credit for being going to notice that. I did see it on Twitter. But you know what though, now that you bring it up, and again, like we talked about last weekend, now when you read the news, when you read the newspaper, you end up reading things that you normally wouldn't seek out. I'm certain, like what you stumped me with today in not knowing who led the league in WRC plus,
you would know, obviously. I mean, they wouldn't print WRC they wouldn't plus, but you would have an idea.
Like, I would know. I would know. Yeah, exactly. Because of that back page of the sports section where it's just like the standings and the league leaders. I looked at that every day when I read a physical newspaper back when I was a kid. So I always knew who led the league in steals, who led the league in wins. So, like, I always knew all of that. And now I no longer do because of the internet.
Man, the internet's done something.
The worst. It sucks, doesn't it?
It's the worst and the best. It's the best of times and the worst of times.
So speaking of things you love, the Red Sox winning, and things you hate but also kind of love, the internet, do you have anything else, or should we find out what you are angry about this week?
We can find out what I'm angry about this week, but I'll tell you, it's going to be hard on the Friday people listen to this for me to be angry, because the real heads know. And Dan will understand. It is the release date.
What are you talking about?
For the sequel to The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. It comes out at midnight on the day people are listening to this. It will be out in the wild. And I promise you, you're going to be hearing about it whether you like it or not.
Okay.
We'll be playing it.
This is a video game?
All right. Get to your stupid anger thing. Yes.
Okay. Well, go ahead. Continue. Keep talking.
No, I haven't played it, so I can't, but I'm just saying it's also the 6-month anniversary of me getting my dog. So it's a big day.
Oh, that's nice. Is this for Super Nintendo, I presume?
Are you kidding me? It's for the Nintendo Switch. They just sold their billionth Switch, Dan.
That's a lot of Switches. Yeah.
It's a lot of
Switches. I'm glad you're giving them more free advertising here.
That's right.
Next week, talk to the Nintendo people. See if they can throw some cash our way.
Hire me.
All right. So you're happy about that, but that's tomorrow, or that's mid. Are you going to go to the waiting line tonight?
No. Well, no.
Or wait, is it now just something you download?
I can.
Is that how video games work these days?
I can download it, but they do have a party in Manhattan for like midnight release, and apparently the tickets sold out so fast it like crashed their website just to the midnight release party. So I'm 45 and I'm excited for this.
All right. I'm happy for you.
We had to
arrange. Just because I'm not interested doesn't mean it doesn't have value.
With my kids, we had to like arrange who was going to play first. But my daughter's going to play first. She's the oldest kid. My son, I had to be like, okay, look, we're going to have a kid play first. She'll play and you guys can play together. And then we'll go from there. But all right, let's make me angry. I have to balance out this anger scale after last week's.
Yeah, last week. Yes. Yeah, last week your anger score was -999,999,981.5, which meant you were very happy. So I don't know.
The scores are made up, and the points don't matter.
What matters more than happiness? Tell me that. Nothing. Oh, all right. So
don't ask me that.
All right. So our first topic here, let's stick with the guy who was the main character of our first segment here, Jaren Duran. Brian Joyner, I don't know if you have followed this story, but as I said, Jaren Duran is better defensively. And this week he was asked about his turnaround and he gave the secret to how he's improved defensively in center field. And remember, this guy really just like couldn't catch the ball at all last year or see the ball. Really. He couldn't figure out where the ball was. But he's been outstanding this year.
I don't know if he's been outstanding.
Well, okay.
He's been getting to the ball, but those roots are not always the.
He's been getting to the ball. You're right. Some of them may be inefficient roots that end up looking fancy because he slides, which, you know what, I'm a fan of those anyway.
Like, you used to see him do that and be like, he's not going to get it. And now I'm getting to the point where like, okay, he's going to get it. It just doesn't look great when you're watching him get there. But as long as he gets there, it's fine.
Well, here's how, and again, this is a guy who, as we all know, was an infielder for his entire life through college, and then was moved to the outfield pretty much as soon as the Red Sox drafted him. That was now 5 or 6 years ago. He's been bad at the outfield the whole time. He is now at least okay. He says the secret to his turnaround is thanks to one Jackie Bradley Jr. And what's he doing? He's shagging baseballs. Here's the exact quote. He, referring to JBJ, he always talked about how shagging is what helped him get better because he realized what balls he can get to and what balls he can't get to, Duran said. I just shagged. Duran added that the most important drill he did this past offseason to become an outfielder was with this high school baseball team. I would go back to my high school and I would just shag their BP, Duran said. And I would just be power shagging with them and communicating with them and hanging out with those guys. So, Brian Joyner, are you angry, happy, or someone in between that apparently the thing that Jaren Duran was missing in his development to become an outfielder was practicing catching the ball?
Oh my God! That's incredible, especially like power shagging. Just power shagging, bro.
That was a JBJ thing. He would call it power shagging because he would, you know, instead of just standing out there like, you know, catching balls that went 10 feet to each side of him, he would like pretend it was a game and go after everything out there. So there you go. The secret to learning how to catch the ball in the outfield is practicing catching the ball in the outfield.
I think that my anger is probably more with the Red Sox than it is with Jaren Duran on this one.
Yes, totally. How come no one tried this with him before?
If he was walking around with his shoes untied for 5 years, you'd think someone would have told him to like practice tying his shoes.
You would think so.
All right, we're going with a 9. That's infuriating. It's infuriating.
Okay, pretty angry.
Thank you, JBJ.
That. Yeah, I mean, we're happy he did it, but yeah.
Okay, oh, right. Practicing.
Catch, doing the thing that I'm asked to do. That's a good idea.
Holy moly, I did not expect that. All right.
With high schoolers, too.
When you said Jaren Duran, I was like, well, how am I going to be mad? Well, now I know.
All right. Well, topic number 2, Jaren Duran. Let's move to the other side of the ball.
Oh, boy.
How does Jaren Duran explain his offense improvement? Extremely similar story. Swap out JBJ, of course, because JBJ can't teach anybody how to hit. And swap in Dustin Pedroia. So Jaren Duran now credits Dustin Pedroia as being someone who really helped him turn around his approach at the plate and his swing. Jaren Duran's quote, he basically just told me, get your hands up, be athletic, act like you're going to hit the fucking shit out of the ball, Duran told Ken Rosenthal. For him to say that to me, I was like, hell yeah, I'm going to buy in.
This one I like.
You like this one?
Well, I like this one because I feel like there's a major difference between... what... he needed to do, like the level of competence he needed to achieve and exactly like what he needed to hear at that time.
Where athletic,
JBJ,
hit the ball hard.
No, but like hitting the ball hard, that's a real thing. And he's done that. His Baseball Savant page came up and his average velocity is like 90 or something. So he is pounding the ball. And he said also that he's been focused on driving the ball. And I think there's probably more to it than what Pedroia is talking about. At the same time, last week we talked about, like, what's the secret when you're in a slump? Oh, hit it the other way.
Obviously. Hit it the other way. Take it off and hit it the other
wisdom.
Way.
Great wisdom. So there's probably more to it than that. Whereas with JBJ, there isn't. It's just like, just catch the ball. So I'm like -4.
-4.
I'm happy, but I'm not overwhelmed because it is sort of pablum, as you said.
Yeah. He does kind of seem like, is Jaren Duran the baseball equivalent of Ron Burgundy? where just like someone just tells him to do something and he immediately just goes and does it. And he's like, this is great.
Maybe more like Zoolander. But he definitely, he might just be well media trained where he's like, okay, look, just talk about players that people really like.
Yeah,
and just say they helped you. He's like, all right, they great.
Did something to me. Yeah, it could be. It could be. I like my version better because that would also explain the vaccination stuff. Like he saw one post on Facebook last year, and he was like, "Oh, well, I'm never getting vaccinated." And then just like after a year, someone was just like, "Hey, you should get vaccinated." And then he was like, "You know what? I think I will." He just changed his mind like 2 years later.
I don't know. I don't know. People talk about players getting serious and whatnot, and we can never really know what's going on. It does seem like there's, insofar as that can be true of certain people at certain times, let's hope that that's what we're seeing here, if that's what he needed.
Yeah, if I see him around the ballpark, I'm gonna test it out. If he's like signing autographs for a game, I'm gonna be like, "Hey, Jaron, want to forget about the game and go get a drink?" And if he's like, "Yeah, that's a good idea," then we'll have confirmation.
No, Jaron, you have to play.
Does everything. He's like, okay, I will. All right, that's it for Jaron Duran. So far you are +9, +9 being happy about, or no, yeah, sorry, right, I got to remember, plus that's is
five.
Bad, minus five. Is good.
Yeah. I'm five angry.
So you had a +5, that means you're angry. Okay, all right, the next one. Kenley Jansen saved his 400th game last night, becoming the 7th closer to do so. 3 of the 7 are already in the Hall of Fame. How do you feel about Kenley Jansen joining that list? Happy, mad? I don't know why you'd be mad, but I'm mad. So that's why I put it on the list. I'm kind of mad, but I put it on the list, but I'll let you go first.
Zero, I don't care. You take the floor.
Zero, you don't care. Okay. I'm obviously not mad that he saved his 400th game last night, nor am I mad that he is touching 99 on the gun and pitching better than he ever has. But I am annoyed in general about the Hall of Fame talk because I was born on this hill. I will live on this hill. I will die on this hill. I truly do not believe that any closer should ever go into the Hall of Fame because I truly believe that at least 1/3 of all starting pitchers in Major League Baseball could all be elite closers if they wanted to do something that was easier and less important. So that's my, I don't know where you stand on closers in the Hall of Fame. The list, by the way, the seven players who have recorded 400 saves.
Can I guess?
Go for it. Lee Smith. You definitely know the first two.
I mean, I'm not going to do it in any order. Like, okay. Obviously. Lee Smith. Yeah.
Yep.
Rivera.
Yep, he's number one.
Trevor Hoffman.
He's number two.
Dennis Eckersley.
Eckersley just missed. He is number 10 all time.
I know Billy Wagner's not in the Hall of Fame, right?
Correct.
But
actually, sorry, let me correct myself. Eck is number 8 on the list. So he just missed 400. He's not, but he's number 8 on the list. Billy Wagner is on the list as well. So you got that one. And he is very close to making, he got like over 60% of the vote last
year. We're just talking 400. We're not talking in the Hall of Fame.
Okay. Yeah. Only 3 are in the Hall of Fame right now. And you've actually already named them.
And I've got 4 out of, you know, just tell me the other ones.
You got Mo, you got Hoffman, Lee Smith, Billy Wagner, Eck is 8th, so, and Kenley is 1 of them. So you're actually just missing 2. You're missing 3.
Troy Percival?
No. One of them you really know.
I really know.
Yep.
Because he was on the Red Sox?
Correct.
Tom Gordon?
No. Tom Gordon spent
Kimbrel.
Kimbrel, yep, there you go.
And then who's the last one? I'm gonna give up.
You're missing 2. K-Rod also has 400, and then John Franco has 406.
Yeah. Franco's got a lot of, especially like Mets team records that are just longevity related.
Yeah, which I feel like proves my point about closers.
Except for it doesn't, because you're wrong.
Tell me.
There's no planet where Mariano Rivera doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame. It just
all right, hold on. Okay, put Mo aside for a second, although we'll get back to Mo because there are a few things that piss me off more than that he, of all people, was the first one to get unanimously voted in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Why? Who cares? Who cares?
Okay.
Who cares?
It's true or false. 1/3 of all starting pitchers in Major League Baseball right now could be elite closers. And even
I don't know if I can answer that, but your point is taken. The point is taken, even if I'm not going to pin it to that number.
Yes. Every relief pitcher is a failed starter. Everyone, or in Kenley Jansen's case, a failed catcher, but every one of them. They all start as starters. They all move to the bullpen because they can't do it.
Yeah, I don't, like, all the players on the diamond are failed shortstops, except for the ones who stick at shortstop.
Yeah, okay, but then there's it's not like every shortstop in the major league can also be Hall of Fame level center fielder.
Apart from the fact that he, and I know on this podcast I talk a ton of New York because I've lived here forever and blah, 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 but like, even if he is like a Shohei Ohtani level exception, I'm not saying he is, to the other closers in his I mean, the postseason has so much to do with it, right? Achievements. I don't see how you can have a representative baseball Hall of Fame and have him not in it. I don't care about Trevor Hoffman. I don't really care about Lee Smith. I really don't care about the others. I generally agree with you.
I'm okay with Rivera being in the Hall of Fame because he is the greatest of all time, and it's not particularly close. I don't think any of the others should be in. And it seems like we're rapidly approaching a period where
John Smoltz is in the Hall of Fame.
And you know what? And that's another thing that actually annoys me. Because if you look at John Smoltz's numbers as a starter, they're not definite Hall of Fame numbers. They're extremely similar to a lot of guys from his era who are considered borderline. Mike Mussina, like Curt Schilling. Like, his numbers as a starter aren't that great. And Mike Mussina has to fight tooth and nail to get in. Curt Schilling's not getting in for other reasons. But even the extracurriculars from Curt Schilling aside, before the extracurricular stuff with him popped up, there are still people saying he's borderline. But Smoltz not only wasn't borderline, Smoltz sailed in on the first ballot. And the only difference in his career was because he had a dumb little 3 or 4 year stint where he was a dominant closer. Again, because at least 1/4 to 1/3 of every starter could be an elite starter, an elite closer.
John Smoltz is a pretty good starter.
Of course he was. Of course he was.
Pitched like put
his starting pitch
40 innings a year.
No. I'm not saying he wasn't. But put his starting numbers up against Mike Mussina's. And then explain to me why Smoltz sailed into the Hall of Fame
Mike Mussina should be in the Hall of Fame, but that's
the only difference. I'm telling you, there's no other difference between their careers except Smoltz's years as a closer. And that's what everyone talked about when they're the only guy to win blah, blah, blah games and save blah, blah, blah games.
Okay.
But you know who cares? Because they all could do it if they wanted to.
You know what? Again, I need to retract. Yeah. The difference is that Mussina's numbers might be better. But I don't think that's an argument against Smoltz.
It's not an argument against Smoltz, but it's an argument if for closers and saves being stupid and we give them all.
Saves are stupid. I am not arguing that. Because if it's just save compiling, it doesn't really mean anything.
Right.
Like Tim Wakefield has a bunch of saves. Derek Lowe has a bunch of saves. That doesn't mean they're the ones you would want pitching, given your druthers in the ninth inning.
Derek Lowe is a lights out closer. There's an alternate timeline where Derek Lowe never returns to the rotation and just spends 15 years as a really good closer and is on that top 10 list of 400 saves leaders. And gets Hall of Fame votes.
That's fine. Again, my argument is with the singular character of Rivera. And if you have objections to anyone else going in who was strictly a closer or a reliever, that's fine. But I think that Rivera is just unimpeachable. And yes, it's annoying that he was the guy who was the unanimous vote, because there's lots of signifiers with him that go beyond the baseball field and whatever. Yeah. But I mean, at least the seal is broken. So it can happen again.
So we don't have to care about it anymore. No, that's
exactly.
True. Exactly. But like in terms of actual,
so Jaren Duran skill. Can go in. So Jaren Duran can be yes. We don't have to worry about, oh no, he's first.
All right. So do you have anything else to say about Kenley Jansen? You're a zero on that. Not happy, not angry about him getting sworn in today. That's fair.
Just really having nothing to do with that. I'm just happy with how good he's been this year. So,
all right. Moving from one guy who's probably not going to make the Hall of Fame to another guy who's probably not going to make the Hall of Fame, Nick Pivetta. This is our last one, by the way, so make this one count. Nick Pivetta was really, really bad this week against the Braves. He's been pretty bad most of the season. And he was asked about potentially being moved to the bullpen after the start. Here is what he said. I don't really understand what you're saying, but I'm just going to continue to do my job. I've started for this team my whole entire career. I'm going to continue to do that. By the end of the year, I'm going to continue to do that. And next year and the year on out. That is Nick Pivetta on being asked. So I wanted to, that's his quote about being moved to the bullpen. Here's the actual question, just to be fair. So the question was, with the team getting back to full strength and decisions are going to be made, do you feel like this is kind of the point where it's auditions to stay in the rotation? That was the question. Nick Pivetta's response, I don't really understand what you're saying, but I'm just going to continue to go out and do my job. I've started for this team my whole entire career. I'm going to continue to do that. By the end of the year, I'm going to continue to do that. And then the next year and the year on out.
Yeah, he seems a little bit defensive there, Nick.
Sure does.
It definitely seems like he's like, why aren't you asking Tanner Houck this question? Go ask him this question. But I don't – it's – he definitely seems to be feeling the pressure. And look, he came after a bad start, right? So, of course, he's not going to be in the best mood. But
reminded me a little bit of Garrett Richards a couple years back.
Yes.
When he, same thing. He's like, I know what I can do. I go out there and I can throw innings for these guys. And everyone's like, dude, your innings suck.
Well, then with the, like Garrett Richards is fine. And then they did the sicky stuff rules. And then Garrett Richards could not pitch anymore.
That's for sure. Yeah.
It's pretty night and day. So yeah, I wouldn't. Am I angry about it? No, I'm a zero. I don't feel anything for Nick Pivetta again. I cannot feel anything for Nick Pivetta.
But that is kind of appropriate for him.
Right. So, but at the same time, that's that might be a tell. That sounds like it might be a tell of how he feels he might or might not fit in going forward on this. The one objection I have to make with the reporter's question is that the Red Sox will be back to full strength. When have they ever been at full strength? Especially if by that, what you mean is James Paxton pitching.
Right.
we'll see. And then there's also the, you know, is James Paxton presumably would be on the Chris Sale like program of, we want you to continue to pitch. It's more important than you being like, going all out, trying to be great and screwing yourself over. But at the same time, the Red Sox pitching staff is built with these sort of like layered contingencies with swingman types. And it's built like that for a reason, to withstand injuries that Whitlock aside, haven't really cropped up just yet, but they will.
Yeah. It will be interesting to see. I mean, like you said about the spring, I mean, there already are two long men out in the bullpen who've been outstanding, Josh Winkowski and Cutter Crawford. Winkowski, as we just established, has a higher B-war than Rafael Devers right now. So is there even room for Pivetta out there? Because he's I mean, look, he's obviously not going to be happy about being bumped to the bullpen in general. And then if they further tell him that, like, oh, you're going to be a one inning guy, and so he won't even necessarily be stretched out and put in a position where he can bounce back in the rotation quickly if need be.
Who gets who? Okay. Who do you think, if they were going to DFA one player or cut him, whatever, do you think it's more likely Kluber or Pivetta?
I would say it's more likely Kluber. Okay. Pivetta, theoretically, I mean, Kluber is on a, well, I guess Kluber is on a 2-year deal. I was going to say he's on a 1-year deal, but that's actually not true.
The Garrett Richards thing, this is really reminiscent of the Garrett Richards at the same time of year too. I think the same general progression this season he was on the Sox. And the reason you have a guy like Pivetta is that, and this is the last year of his contract, right?
Good question.
I think it is.
Keep talking, like, I'll look it up.
So you can cut bait at the end of the contract, and you have Kluber, who is like same sort of guy, and you don't have to pay him for not pitching.
He has one more year of ARB left, by the way.
Okay, so then probably Kluber, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, if it were me, I would cut Kluber for sure. I don't.
Yeah, I know. But you were also thought the new bases were going to ruin the game.
No, it didn't. What are you talking about?
Oh my God, you were so upset about the new bases.
I'm upset about them aesthetically. I think they look too big, but I appreciate the need for them. Okay. What are you talking about right now?
I'm making stuff up to make you look better.
I did.
And feel better about myself. I am making stuff up to bring you down. Yeah. I'll just make that very clear.
Yes. Okay. I was super excited about the new bases. When those first pictures came out, I was a little worried that they looked too goofy.
That's fair.
But you know, I don't, like, same thing. I haven't noticed the bases looking outrageously large at all.
That's fair.
All right, so that's it. So you are at a +5 for the week. That means you're kind of angry. Is that Matt's how you feel?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It sure does.
Okay.
But then again, by the time people have listened to this, I will be knee-deep in Zelda, so it won't.
What if the game sucks?
Well, I do have this slight fear that, I mean, the are you a Daft Punk fan?
No. I wouldn't call myself a fan. I'm familiar with their work.
So their last, and I mean it was their final album, was Random Access Memories, that they had this, and it was like 10 years after their last album. And they really planned the promotions very carefully. Like, they had a little 10-second or 15-second ad on Saturday Night Live. It was just a little snippet. And then at, like, Coachella, they had a longer version, like a minute long. And it was this perfectly executed campaign for what was expected to be this next masterwork from this group. And in fairness to them, it was. But that had really nothing to do with the thing itself. They're like, the advertising for it and the game that we're talking about, the game might not be as good as everyone wants it to be, but that's what happens when the game you are the sequel to is literally IGN's number one video game of all time. It's just, that's a really hard bar to reach. So it almost certainly won't reach that bar. I have had the worry of, like, what if it's just too much? But
you should.
I'll know soon.
Yeah, this is a good opportunity for you to practice one of our off-season exercises of negative visualization. Just until midnight tonight. Just imagine all the ways the game could be really bad. And then if it is, you'll be prepared for it. If it's not, you'll be happy.
The one thing I fear, and I sort of get the sense of, is that it does seem to be more complicated than the previous one, given that, like, the previous one has brought my kids and I together in a way that's true of, like, Harry Potter for some families or Star Wars for others. I fear it might be too complicated for them.
But you fear that it's going to drive your family apart?
Well, if so, actually, I started playing Zelda after my family split apart. So there you go. Enough about that.
Anything else, or should we talk about this weekend series?
Let's talk about this weekend series, a new segment that we're trying to remember to do. But first, this quick break.
Oh, yeah. 50 minutes into the show. Let's take a break.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
We're back. We're going to talk about the upcoming series. Who are they playing, Dan? I don't even know.
St. Louis Cardinals.
Good. That's exactly what I want to play right now.
The imploding disaster of a team.
Oh, yes. Perfect. I love this.
You want to guess the St. Louis Cardinals record?
How many games have they played? So I can.
They have played.
I know. You know what I
38. 38 games.
16 and
22. 13 and 25.
Oh, I love it.
Than you thought.
I love it. I love it.
The pitching matchups are Team USA ace Adam Wainwright, who has an ERA over 7 this year. Takes the hill on Friday night against James Paxton. Saturday, Steven Matz versus Chris Sale. And Sunday, it's the Sunday night game. This is the Sox for, although I don't even know if it's on ESPN right now. The Sunday night games like haven't been on ESPN for some reason. But it is the 7 o'clock Sunday night game.
I hate the Sunday night game now. I hate it.
Really? Why?
I used to love it. Now I hate it.
Why do you?
I don't want to stay up late. I want to watch baseball in the afternoon on Sunday.
Well, but now we have the pitch clock to you know, keep things in check.
My body clock keeps things in check by putting me to sleep.
All right. Well, it's also 7 o'clock instead of an 8 o'clock start.
That's fair. That's fine.
Miles Mikolas versus Corey Kluber, whose name, for some reason, I wrote on my, I spelled his name on his notes with a K instead of a C. maybe that's a sign that Corey Kluber is going to have a big strikeout night against the Cardinals. So what do you think? What do you think is going to happen? Give me a prediction for the series. Who's going to win the series, and tell me one thing that's going to happen.
Man, we got some old guys out there on the mound.
Huh? We really do. Paxton, Sale, Kluber, Wainwright.
That
all
is,
pitching in the same series.
That is crazy. I'm going to say the Red Sox sweep. I mean, the Cardinals are a tire fire right now.
Yeah, sure.
I know it's foolhardy to predict a sweep, but I would say 2-1 because you just don't want to predict a sweep. It's, no, the Red Sox are they lost to the Braves, but the Braves are really good. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're good, and like this is great. I mean, first of all, this is like that one year that the Yankees were bad in like 1990. It's like just when the Cardinals are up in flames, just don't be afraid to look straight at it. You won't like, it's like a double rainbow. Soak it in, really soak it in, because it won't last.
This is also going to be the first like really nice weather home series the Sox have had. Tomorrow night, Friday and Saturday are both going to be in the 80s. Probably not at night for Friday night, but still. So like this could be.
So it'll be perfect at night. Yeah.
Yeah. So it'll be like, this could be like the weekend that Fenway like comes alive for the summer.
Yeah. This could be really wonderful. And this is, look, we talked about this a lot and it's worth repeating. When the Yankees are four games above 500 in last place, it is so nice to play the AL East less often.
Yeah. This it's nice.
Yeah, of course.
It's unbelievable that it took Major League Baseball this long to do this, but I'm excited. I love the fact that we're going to play the Dodgers every year and play the Padres every year. And now we have a legitimate rivalries in baseball have really been crystallized over the last 20 years, I think, by the division structure, right? Like you have a divisional rival. And, you know, every team pretty much has like one principal divisional rival. And then you learn to hate the other team. You know, I've certainly come to hate the Rays over the past 20 years. I don't hate the Jays, but, you know, we could get there over the next couple of years. But, like, I like the possibility that maybe we can start hating the Dodgers based on regular season results and not just meeting them in the World Series once.
You know, I was talking with the kid that the parents at pickup and all the Yankees fans here, I've said this before, they all hate the Astros way more than the Red Sox right now. Like, yeah. it's not close. It's not even in the same stratosphere. And I don't know if that the opposite is true, but it is certainly better. It's just better to play every team to have actual, when the mechanics of teams rubbing each other the wrong way are sort of alchemic. And you just never know what's going to do it.
Right.
And when it happens, it's fantastic. You want them to care. And it's hard to care. Even if these teams are like in 2004, the Red Sox and the Yankees, it's like, you know, 2003, 2004, that is the absolute peak of any two teams in the unbalanced schedule era. Like really just hating each other. That's the absolute peak. Outside of those years, it is impossible to keep up the level of intensity for 19 games against four different teams. You just lose this sense. You lose a sense of novelty and interest when it's the same shit over and over. And frankly, it's good for the teams in smaller markets who can use more visits from the Red Sox, from the Yankees, from the Cubs, from the Cardinals, from the Dodgers, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm all for it. I think, and again, this is a perfect example of how it like is actually helping the Red Sox this year. Oh, we're going to go play the 13-win Cardinals right now. Or we're hosting them instead of hosting the Blue Jays, you know, for yet another three-game series.
All right. I'll say that the Sox take the series, but only 2-1.
Coward! Coward!
Just because, for exactly the reason that you said, just because you don't ever want to predict. I did predict the sweep with Keaton earlier this year against the Tigers, but I'm going with 2-1 in this time. The other thing, too, I was, you know, talking about how Fenway is going to come alive, is that the Cardinals fans do always pack Fenway. They really, really do. So there will be a lot of Cardinals fans in attendance. Not that that matters much on the baseball field, but it'll be fun. I think it'll be a fun weekend. It'll be interesting to see I mean, we're not used to seeing Cardinals fans in states of agitation. That's not really their default setting.
It really reminds me of Red Sox fans at Yankee Stadium back in the day. Like, if you're walking in there, like, yeah, we beat your ass in the World Series twice recently. Obviously, they got us before. But, and you suck.
And like, yeah.
And you're going to show up to get harassed.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to make one. Here's my one bold prediction for the series. One thing, just looking at the three games, what's one thing that's going to happen? Tomorrow night, James Paxton is going to come out and strike out the side in the first inning. He is then going to give up four earned runs in the second. I don't know. I think they're still going to win that game. It'll be another late night, Friday night magic. But that's my prediction. You want to predict anything that's going to happen in this series?
That's a pretty good one. I got to give you that. Let me think of something neat that could happen. How about Raimel Tapia, big home run?
Ooh.
I'm not going to tell you the day. Big home run.
In keeping with the Jaren Duran theme, is it going to be an inside the park home run?
Ooh. See. This is why you're better at this exercise than I am, because that would be nice.
It would be nice, wouldn't it?
Duran, the way he's swinging the bat at Fenway, him and Tapia, but the way Duran is hitting it, there are some inside the park home runs waiting to happen.
Duran might frankly be hitting the ball too hard.
Yeah, that was the one thing I was thinking.
The ball's off the wall before he touches first. He's hammering the goddamn ball.
He really is, but he's really fast.
That would be nice. What a moment of closure that would be for Jaren Duran if he could hit an inside the park home run with Raimel Tapia on base. Or I guess probably, you know what? Well, then Tapia probably wouldn't be ahead of him. So let's say this with Tapia on deck, Jaren Duran hits an inside the park home run, and Tapia is the first guy there to greet him.
And then he also hits an inside the park home run.
Yeah, and then he hits an inside the park home run. Jaren Duran, I'll write this for you if you want. That's going to be the story you tell to open your Hall of Fame speech in Cooperstown one day.
There you go. Got any recommendations?
I do have one recommendation. It's kind of a basic one because it's getting a lot of buzz. But have you heard of this TV show, Jury Duty?
No.
Okay, good. I'm glad you have it. So I'm going to explain the deal with it and my specific experience with it, because the way I experienced it is the reason why I'm recommending it. It is essentially a mockumentary about a fictionalized jury. You know, on a court case.
Is this the one that has James Marsden in it?
This is the one that has James Marsden.
I've seen clips from it. I didn't know it was an actual show. I thought it was just a skit.
Okay, so let me explain something to you then, because I misunderstood what it was. If you start it, you won't. So I will. I'm going to spoil something for you, but I'm literally just spoiling the concept of the show that anyone who watches it from the start will know. I didn't watch it from the start. My wife was watching it. I came in like 10 minutes into the show. I just sat down. It just seems like a light, fluffy comedy mockumentary, right? And I'm watching it. I'm like, this is good enough for what it is. It's not great, but it's good enough for what it is. James Marsden is the only person you would recognize. He's the only established actor, and he does a very good job in it.
Of playing himself, correct?
Of playing himself, yeah, an exaggerated version of himself. But there's another guy in the show. I'm watching it. And I'm like, James Marsden is good. But I'm like, there's this other guy. And I'm like, this guy is fucking stealing the show. And I've never seen him before. But he's so good. And I'm sitting there watching him. And I'm like, I'm saying to myself, is this like the best new actor on TV right now? Because he's so genuine. He doesn't even look like an actor. He's not like ugly or anything. He's a good looking guy, but like he looks like such a regular guy. And he's charming in a way. He's not like Marsden charming, but he's definitely the type of guy that, like, you know, he would be nice to talk to. And the whole time I'm like, who is this guy? So I look him up, and it turns out, Joyner, that this show is not actually just a mockumentary. The whole concept of the show is that it's a fake trial, but everyone but this guy knows that. So this guy, who I found so magnetic because I couldn't believe like how real and genuine he was coming across, that's because he's just like an electrician in California. And he actually is a real genuine guy. And it's everyone else on the show is an actor except for him. And I didn't know that. Like I said, when I first watched the first episode and a half, I was just like, okay, this is fine. And now that I know that, it's much more interesting. And I'm kind of having this revelation about like, what is acting? because I was blown away by this guy for the first two episodes because I thought he was like the best actor in the world. And it turns out like he was just so much better because he wasn't acting at all. And so maybe all acting is actually really bad.
That's maybe he is the best actor in the world.
Well, so there's now this thing. People are really loving him. Because like I said, he is charming in his way. I mean, he's just a dude. He's a total dude, but he's like a nice guy. And I mean, they obviously cast. You know, he's not a rando off the street. The producers of this show went out looking for a type, and they found him, and they put him in the show. And so, you know, the only reason why the show works is because he is in real life. Like, he's the type of guy, he is connecting to all the other jurors in the box in a way. Like, he talks to everybody. He listens to everybody. Like, he's a nice guy. That's what makes it a good show. And so people are really falling in love with him. And now there's people lobbying saying that, like, he should be nominated for the Emmys. And real actors are saying, well, like, wait, he's literally not acting. We can't do this. And I'm sure he's not going to be nominated, but it's apparently a little controversy now whether he should be.
I promise this goes somewhere. The F1 just had the race in Miami last weekend. And before the race, the F1 commented, because everybody's out where the cars are right before the race starts, including celebrities, and they're all just like hobnobbing right until the race is about to start. And so the Sky Sports crew, the British crew, has this guy, Martin Brundle. He's a former racer, I believe. He goes and talks to people and celebrities. And especially in America, where he doesn't know celebrities, he gets them wrong often. And this week, he went up to Marsden and said, because he heard Roger Federer was around, and he went up to Marsden and was like, hey.
I mean, they kind of look alike, but James Marsden is much better looking than Roger Federer.
Yeah, it's very well. And also, Roger Federer is one of the most well-recognized athletes in our lifetime.
Yeah, they both have extremely distinct faces. That even though they kind of look similar,
they got the hair. They got like their hair is really
that's it. Yeah, it's just the hair and the skin tone, really.
Roger Federer wasn't on any 30 Rock. Let me tell you that much. Marsden forever, baby. My recommendation is Brooks Shoes. I don't know if you run or walk. Do you walk? Have you ever walked?
I think I do some walking. Yeah.
And I found many years ago after I went to Discount Shoe Warehouse, and this is the only time I've ever seen Brooks there because they're like a boutique running brand. And I got this pair. I was like, this is the only shoe that I've ever had that doesn't make my back hurt. And I have only worn them since then, but my recent pair got very, very worn down. And I finally got a new one, and I forgot just how glorious the new pair of Brooks Adrenaline is. So buy Brooks shoes if you have the money. If not, don't.
I've never even heard of them.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like they're a very rare company these days in that like they do one thing and they do it very well and they don't expand. Like, we make running shoes. That is it. And they're awesome. That's my recommendation.
Good to know. You got
anything else? You got anything else before we abscond so I can go play my little video game?
I don't think I do. I think that's it.
All right. Well, this has been Monsters of Sox. We have a logo now. Red Sox are going to sweep the Cardinals. You heard it here first. We'll be back next week to talk more the Boston Red Sox, Dan. Have a good one.
Take care.